FM News Talk 97.1. On demand audio.
Good morning, Jim. Happy Thursday to you.
Same to you.
Absolutely. I guess you were up late like I was watching the president's speech last night.
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't. I'm trying to catch up today, and I started off trying to figure out what's going on in the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. So
yeah.
I haven't yet got to that, or I don't know. I doubt he said anything about it. That would be interesting. And I haven't. Yeah, I do want to read about Manuel Cleaver too, who I know. And I think he got there. No, I served with Emmanuel. That's true. I did. So I'm going to be interested to see under what circumstances he decided to abandon the chair.
Well, he spoke out about that yesterday. It was during the debate. Nancy Pelosi had just stood up and referred to the president as racist. She got called out on that for violating House rules. Steny Hoyer agreed with the fact that she was out of order. And then some yelling ensued on the floor of the House, and Emmanuel Cleaver stood up and said, "All you people want to do is fight." And he dropped the gavel and said, "I'm going to walk away." These were his comments last night to the media about why he did what he did.
Congressman Cleaver joins us now, sir. Very good to have you.
Good to be with you.
What made you do that?
Well, Neil, I was frustrated. If you look at the footage, I was had admonished both sides during this process. My goal was to get through this without adding any more tumult, without adding any more hostilities.
Yeah, you know, I guess my argument to Emmanuel Cleaver, and I don't know the congressman personally, is that your side is the one that kind of brought this up and brought it to a vote and had to know what was going to happen. When they did, I guess I'm not surprised. How about you?
Yeah, but I'd be surprised if Cleaver did that as a partisan statement. You know, he has a very long-standing emphasis on the importance of civility, and that's, I suspect, that the whole scene probably just disgusted him, and good for him. I mean, he's making a statement that, you know, we need to begin emphasizing a little bit some of the things that hold us, you know, together. I've got to read more about it, but it sounds like a good thing. Although I'm sure they'll never put him in the chair again now, because you can't. I mean, it actually causes if you abandon the chair, whoever's in the chair has control of the House, and so yeah, the majority puts people in there who will reliably follow their line. On the other hand, it sounds like they were split, because it sounded like, Hoyer was concerned himself about some things. Now I do have to read it. I'm sorry I'm not
no, that's okay.
For the interview, but it sounds like a really interesting personal dynamic working.
You know the House rules, though, and apparently since they were written by Thomas Jefferson many, many hundreds of years ago, you're not supposed to stand up on the floor of the House and say things like that about the President of the United States. Nancy Pelosi claimed that she cleared that ahead of time with the sergeant at arms or whoever she had to speak to about it. I kind of find that hard to believe, but it was controversial, and she knew it when she did it.
You are not supposed to refer to sitting members of the Senate or the President in a fashion that is uncivil, and there's a long body of precedent about what is and is not uncivil. Sometimes it gets to some pretty funny type incidents. I remember one time one of my colleagues on the Republican side referred to President Clinton and said, "We have to pin the little bugger down." And people thought the term bugger was an unparliamentary term, and we had to vote on that. And I came running over to the floor to vote. And of course, when that happens, you know, because it's happened like only a few minutes before, you really don't know what's happening. So you go over there and you try and figure it out while the vote is pending. And I thought of getting up and asking the chair whether he said bugger or booger, because I thought it might make a difference. But I didn't, and I don't remember how I voted on the thing. So, Yeah, and look, there is an important principle behind it, which it sounds like Congressman Cleaver was standing up for, and good for him, which is that if you don't enforce rules like that, you can degenerate into really a mob. And we don't want to do that. Well, you know, these institutions started at a time where people would fight duels over this stuff, right?
Right.
And you don't want things to degenerate to that. So good for him for standing up for that.
I'm glad you brought that up because people kind of forget that when they talk about how nasty politics are these days, that sometimes it was even nastier in our past in terms of how people resolve conflict, right?
Yeah, if you said something that was personally insulting to somebody as a matter of honor, they would call you out for it. And we don't want to do that. So instead, we enforce some rules and some codes. And the other thing it requires you to do is to think before you get up and speak, and preferably to prepare some remarks that actually contain an argument instead of just an accusation or an insult. So, it is important. It can be kind of funny sometimes, but the underlying rule is important.
Yeah, true. Ask Aaron Burr how that works out sometimes.
Exactly.
Not good, right?
Exactly.
Not a good thing. You know, yesterday the House, in a separate vote, held the Attorney General and Secretary Ross in contempt over the census dispute. Now, I remember when President Obama's Attorney General, Eric Holder, was held in contempt over not releasing records that Congress had asked for regarding the Fast and Furious investigation. This seems a bit more trivial to me. I'm trying to not say that from a partisan point of view, but, I mean, it is serious to hold somebody in contempt of Congress, although there's not a lot of teeth there, right?
No, there isn't, because it has to be enforced in the courts by the Justice Department. And so the Congress needs to be careful and choosy in how it does that sort of thing. Otherwise, it loses any meaning. It becomes a sort of political tactic that is here today and gone tomorrow. And so, what I would say is that the Congress has other tools for enforcing or standing up for what it believes are its prerogatives, and primarily the tool of appropriations. And so what you can do, if you feel the executive is not cooperating, you feel strongly enough about it, is you can put something in an appropriations bill requiring them to do it. Now the president can veto that. This is all part of the checks and balances. And when you get into gray areas of what Congress is entitled to and isn't, the framers anticipated that the institutions would fight it out using, you know, those checks and balances. And that's how it's done. So I don't expect anything to happen from this. I do know that Bill Barr is about as straight a shooter as you have in Washington, so I would be shocked if he did anything that was actually contemptuous.
Let me play
I think what they're probably upset about is the president refusing to give away, you know, executive privilege, which he has to protect. I mean, he has to protect the institution of the presidency. The Congress can't get into personal conversations between various staff and the president.
Sure. Let me get to the president's speech last night and get your thoughts on that. Let me play cut number 28 here, please, Tricia.
Tonight I have a suggestion for the hate-filled extremists who are constantly trying to tear our country down. They never have anything good to say. That's why I say, hey, if they don't like it, let them leave. Let them leave. Let them leave. They're always telling us how to run it, how to do this, how to do that. You know what? If they don't love it, tell them to leave it.
You know, Jim, the president has kind of doubled down on this. And my point of view from the beginning was that this has never been about the racial background of the people he's talking about, although they want to try to make it that way. I don't care what color your skin is. I don't care if you are a naturalized citizen or you were born here. If you endorse and embrace policies that threaten the American dream and the American system that we have in place, I'm going to fight you on that. That's what I take from the president's comments, specifically in the speech last night when he was saying, if you don't like this country, leave.
I agree with that. And I think the president, you know, harkens back to an earlier time, which he's old enough to remember, and I'm old enough to remember, during the Vietnam War, when the phrase love it or leave it, you would see America love it or leave it on bumper strips and on various signs. And it's a it is a rhetorical device used to make the point that some people have an imbalanced and unreasoning hostility towards their own country. In other words, all they ever see, and this is what the president said, all they ever see or talk about, either in current events or in history, are the bad things of the United States. And one of the things I used to, you know, when this subject would come up in different contexts, I would say, you know, I've been married now 34 years, okay, and my wife's a wonderful woman. She's not faultless. So if all I ever thought about, I mean, I just walked around thinking about the things about my wife that I'm not entirely happy with. I have to be a little careful here. I would pretty soon grow to have a resentment of her. And we understand that in relationships, don't we? And the president is saying, look, that's what these people do. That's what, and you know, he's right. Now, whether he's expressing it the way everybody would, I don't know. But, you know, Trump, when he's dealing with other political figures and they come after him, he comes back at them. And that's what he's doing. I think you played a clip from John Thune, and that's what Thune is saying. He's saying, look, these people have an unreasonable and imbalanced picture of their own country. And I do think that when somebody has... is an immigrant, that's particularly unfortunate. It's like, you know, you came here to build a better life for yourself because you thought, or your parents did, because you thought it was a good place to live. So can we hear a little bit of that from you?
Yes. Yeah. I've said that what is the American dream? In my opinion, the American dream is knowing that if you work hard, you can have goals and achieve them, and you can rise above whatever income level or societal place your parents held. Parents hope that their kids are going to have a better life than they had. And you can achieve that in this country, but you have to work for it. That's the American dream. And it's easy to envision a 10 or 15 years from now, if we've got a President Warren and a Speaker of the House, Ocasio-Cortez, and, you know, a Senate Majority Leader, you pick him, Chuck Schumer, whoever it is, and they've voted policies into place that have raised the income tax to 70% and restricted businesses, and you start to chip away at people's ability to achieve that dream in the name of equality.
Yeah, and this isn't an argument so much over policy. I mean, nobody's saying you can't argue for whatever policy you want to argue. People can express this kind of hostility if they want to. I mean, they're free to do it. But others are then free to point that out using different kinds of, you know, devices or you know, forms of argument to do that. And one of them is to make exactly this point, that it's a kind of national, you know, oikophobia. That's a term for a sort of hostility towards your own home, right? And so, you know, I don't think that there's anything, that any change that could occur in America that would make Ocasio-Cortez, for example, happy here.
Right.
I think she would continue to feel aggrieved. And I don't think that's good for her or anybody. And I think that's what Trump is saying here. And they don't want him to say it, but. You know, he's got a right to say what he wants too.
Yeah. Well, you know, Rashida Tlaib has dropped the F-bomb in describing the president, refuses to apologize for that, and says that she'll probably say it again. So Donald Trump's not the kind to ever back down from something like that. Jim, we're going to run out of time here, I'm afraid, but you said you were paying attention to what's going on in the Middle East. Is that starting to flare up again? Has that been?
Yeah, they're seizing tankers now. Panamanian flag one, evidently. I mean, the story's going to come out. So the game here is they're hurting because of the sanctions. They're hurting badly. And they're trying to get greater international support. So they're trying to get the United States to attack them under circumstances where they think the Iranians think they'll get more international support. So Trump is not playing that game. And he is waiting until they do something where, you know, the whole world is going to demand that we do something and, along with our allies in response. And I think I kind of agree with that. It is annoying, though, because, you know, it's threatening the freedom of the seas. So we'll see what the administration does. They've stepped up patrols. They'll probably catch them in the act of doing it at one point and have full justification to, you know, to sink whatever is trying to capture a tanker, and that'll put an end to it.
That's good. Jim Talent, thanks as always. We appreciate you.
Get more at 971talk.com.